Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tombstone Tuesday with your host, Tui Snyder. Tui writes books, gives talks, takes photos, and does a lot of research about exploring historic cemeteries. Tui, what do you have for us in this episode?
What I have for us in this episode is a very fun episode and a wonderful guest. I'm so excited. So I just want to welcome everyone to Tombstone Tuesdays. I am your host, Tui Snyder, in case you didn't notice. And you can join me on the first Tuesday of each month for a half-hour chat about exploring historic cemeteries right here on Teal Gray's Paramysteries Radio. Now, in previous episodes, I've talked about cemetery safety and etiquette, what shamrocks mean symbolically. I even told you about the time I had to spend the night in a cemetery thanks to an explosion at a fish sticks factory, fun things like that. So if you want to catch any of my replays, then drop by my website, tuisnyder.com. Also, for any new listeners out there, I just want to briefly tell you who I am. I'm an author. I'm a speaker, a photographer, and I do specialize in historic cemeteries, cemetery symbolism, and overlooked history. And I've written a few books along these lines, including Understanding Cemetery Symbols, a graveyard journal. I have one coming out later this year called 6 Feet Under Texas. That one will be interesting. It's a bunch of stories about quirky and weird burials, you know, people being buried in their sports car or having a telephone wire into their mausoleum, things like that. And I also, I've got to tell you, just a couple of days ago, I had a brand new book come out on Amazon. It's called Grave Goods, The Meaning of Stones, Coins, Seashells, and Other Items in Historic Cemeteries. And this is a topic that I did cover briefly in my book, Understanding Cemetery Symbols. But in this new book, I go into a whole bunch more detail. Plus, it has over 50 full-color photos in it. So it's kind of like a photo essay book. And these are photos that I took while researching cemeteries all over the place, like Texas, of course, where I live, but also Australia, Argentina, England, so forth. So if you enjoy learning about historic cemeteries, I invite you to go grab my book, Grave Goods, and grab it today because it's still on its early bird special, which is only $1.99. And that's the cheapest Amazon would let me set the price because of all those full color photos. But within the next 24 hours, I'm going to be boosting that price. So if that sounds interesting to you, go grab it now. All right. I want to shift gears. I have a special guest with me today, and I'm so excited. I'm talking about celebrity death expert Scott Michaels, and he's a celebrity in his own right. You may have seen him on TV. He actually created Dearly Departed Tours in Hollywood and the original celebrity death webpage, Find a Death, which I absolutely love. Now, he has also got a highly binge-worthy YouTube channel. It's Dearly Departed Online. And there's a link to it from the radio show page, if that's where you're listening to this from. And if you're not, just type, you know, Scott Michaels, Dearly Departed into YouTube and you will get it. And like when I say this is binge-worthy, I mean, he's got like an interview with the man who helped embalm Marilyn Monroe. And there's a, like at one point he explains that hers was the only body to come out of the L.A. coroner's office that wasn't totally nude, which, you know, I was like, what? Because there was so much made about the fact that she died in the nude and all that. And yet here they were treating her with so much respect. And it's a really fascinating interview because they, you know, it gets into details that you, somebody has to deal with these things. And they had to deal with her celebrity and they had to create an, you know, atmosphere of respect. It's really fascinating. But he also So you're going to be watching that. Then before you know it, you'll be watching his video about Mickey Rooney's relatives talking and Lucille Ball. And like I said, it's great. Like, I didn't know that. Well, I'll have to ask Scott about this. I didn't know that there were some girls were killed at Elvis Presley's funeral, for instance. I mean, it's just nutty. And while I'm at it, I should plug my own YouTube channel too. If you're curious about the gravesite of Peter Mayhew, the guy who played Chewbacca, turns out he was buried in my little, you know, nowhereburg town. So I've got a video about that, and I've even got some interesting ones coming up, like Lee Harvey Oswald's grave, Bo Diddley's grave, Lynyrd Skynyrd crash site, etc. I'll be sharing those soon. So make sure you like and subscribe to both of our channels. All righty. Enough. I have got a lot of questions for Scott. And, there is something I better tell you before we dive in. I'm the only one running the studio tonight, and this is only a half-hour show. So if you call in, I may not be able to bring you on, but I will try. Just be patient and understanding. I'll do the best I can. All right. Enough of all that housekeeping and so forth. Let's bring Scott on. How are you doing, Scott?
I am terrific, Tui. I hope you're doing well, too. You staying cool in Texas?
Oh, yeah, as cool as I can. We already do have to have our air on, as you call it over here. They don't even call it air conditioning. It's just air. It's that important. How about you?
It's about 90 here today, so we're toasting up for the summer.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I know. It makes it hard in a way, it makes it easier to be inside, I suppose, with the whole quarantine thing, because, you know, it's like my husband Larry and I kind of joke that, you know, this time of year it gets to be like crematoria outside, you know. So it's like, but I just wanted to ask you, starting off, because I follow you online, and to me, it just always seems like you're everywhere, and I almost always hear about celebrity deaths from you before I do anywhere else, and I just really wonder, I mean, how do you manage to be everywhere, and how do you keep track of everything?
Well, the short answer is I don't, and I can't, because I've got so many different things going on. I'm like a pinball. I'll do that. So luckily, I have a good group of people that help me out. Troy helps me out a great deal. But, you know, like Mike Dorsey and I do the Dearly Departed podcast, and we put together our YouTube videos. And with the television stuff, luckily, they come to me a lot of times. You know, if something weird is happening, they'll come to me. And the funny thing is I've done, like, interviews for the E! Network, and because those shows get recycled and recut, interviews that I did 20 years ago are still showing up in documentaries now. Somebody told me I was on 2020 the other night about Phil Hartman. It's like, all right, I didn't know that. So I end up being all over the place from things I did, you know, several years ago, too. So it's a funny way to get notarized or get known. But I am, and I'm lucky.
Yeah, I think it's great. And a question I have for you is that we both do a lot of research, and I suspect you're a little bit like me because I really enjoy research, and I don't think you'd be doing this if you didn't find it fun. But I'm so curious, like, do you have any tips, like research tips for people who are out there researching the deceased? I mean, maybe not even famous people like you research, but, you know, maybe their own relatives. I mean, what sort of tips do you have on the research end?
When it comes to looking up people, most people go online straight away and do a quick tap of a name. I usually go to, like, the second page of results, because that's where you find usually the most obscure information. You know, not straight to the Wikipedia, but you'll find some different people's accounts of things. If you'll read, you know, sort of, if you do get to Wikipedia, sometimes you'll find a daughter or a son or a wife mentioned or a husband, and you could go looking for them. Just go to the not so obvious avenues, and old newspaper articles are great for that too. And the initial reports, and you'll hear about neighbors and different things. So that's the generation I usually go to, because I always like to hear about the things, I always say, the things you didn't know about the things you thought you knew everything about.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, like even when I do research, I usually have sort of a preconceived idea, and I actually love it when my preconceived idea is wrong. You know, I'm like, oh, great, I was wrong, you know. But I'm curious, too, so, you know, like for a lot of me, my research is usually everybody's dead involved. It's usually so long ago. But you end up speaking to people who were directly connected to certain events that we've all heard of, like, you know, that core, I mean, the embalmer from Marilyn Monroe, for instance. And so I'm just curious, though, that first phone call, that initial reaching out to people, you know, the nephew or the daughter of someone famous, like how, that's got to be a bit of a delicate process, I would imagine. I mean, how do you navigate that? Do you prefer email or phone? I mean, how do you do that?
You know, Facebook is a bizarre tool. It really is. And I found that people will respond to Facebook messages a lot of times. Like when I was reading about the Elvis Presley thing that you mentioned earlier about the two girls that were killed in front of Graceland the night before Elvis's funeral. I just happened to poke around on Facebook and I found the girl who survived, and I dropped her a message and asked if she wouldn't mind talking to me. And that was several years ago. But that's like gold, because those are stories that would haven't been told before. And luckily, doing the tours that I do, a lot of times I'll meet people. I had a gentleman sitting next to me. This is about 15 years ago, I guess, and we talked about things, and he just happened to drop into conversation that he was Joan Crawford's grandson, and he says, "I never told anybody that before," and I was like, "Oh, this is gold." So and Casey agreed to let me interview him, and so it's just circumstance. A lot of times, I had some people on the tour that were Marilyn Monroe fans, and they happened to meet Alan Abbott, who helped embalm Marilyn, and gave me his number with his permission, and I drove up to Monterey and interviewed him. It's just funny how things work out that way. I've been very lucky. Virginia Graham, who was the witness who busted the Manson case, broke it wide open. She wrote a book, and her publisher actually contacted me, and now we're good friends. So it's funny how things work out that way. It's just being nice to people, and usually they're nice back.
Wow. So, I saw a picture. Speaking of, I finally, just like 3 weeks ago, I finally saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I actually really enjoyed it. But I saw a picture, I think, of you and Quentin Tarantino on your Facebook page. So did they reach out to you? Because, I mean, that being about the Mansons, in a Tarantino way, did they just reach out to you?
Yes. Yes, I got a phone call that Quentin Tarantino wanted to meet with me, and I went to his office, and it was literally he and I for about an hour, and we're just talking over the facts of the case, and then I took him and a few people out a couple of days later and took him around to all the locations and introduced him to a friend of mine who they ended up filming at his house for about a week. So, and I ended up in the credits, which was a pretty awesome thing, too. So that was sort of that was a really exciting summer to be in LA, and it was a weird, wonderful time during that whole year after I did my work on it till the movie came out. It was wonderful to see Los Angeles, Hollywood being put back the way it looked in 1969, physically being put back. It was an exciting time. Yeah,
that really must have been exciting. I can imagine. When I was watching the movie, like as the fateful night, you know, approaches, I was so scared because some of my first nightmares involved like the Manson family coming and killing my family. And so I was like watching the movie. I had a pillow over my face and I was sort of peeking around it. So anyway.
As soon as you saw that date show up on the screen, August 8th, 1969, it was like chills. So, not knowing. And up until the time the movie came out, we went to see it about a week before the premiere. They had a screening. We bought tickets. It wasn't like a special thing for people. Having worked on the movie, I had no idea how it was going to end. So it was a fascinating. They kept things quite quiet, and I was really impressed with
that. I actually really liked it, and I was so surprised because, like I said, I'd had nightmares about it, and, you know, Tarantino, you know, things can turn into quite a bloodbath, so I had this real sense of just happiness after the movie. It was just neat to see just the Sharon Tate character, how sweet she seemed. That was interesting to me. That's funny that you didn't even know that they managed to keep the ending such a secret even for you.
Yeah, that was really wonderful. It was wonderful.
Now, your site, Find a Death, it's funny. Like, I didn't even know you were connected with it. I actually got to meet you a few years ago down in Galveston at an event, and I still, to me, Find a Death, I didn't realize you were connected with it for the longest time. And so often when I'm doing my own research, I'll end up, like, going through a side door and ending up on some, you know, Find a Death page. And I just thought that was really great. I mean, but I'm curious, like, you know, because how it works for you, like with your own research, do you ever come up with like two conflicting reports? I mean, probably, I like when you know, two different relatives and they're saying, no, it was this way and no, it was this way. I'm just really curious how you handle that, because sometimes in my own research, I find it frustrating when there are two, you know, first person accounts and they just flat out contradict.
Yeah, it's interesting with the, you know, I can only put together what I know, and I will straight out say this is what some people say. So-and-so disagrees. Good mm-hmm. case in point would be the whole Joan Crawford thing. And some people are definitely on team Christina Crawford and Joan was a monster. And most of the people that knew Joan personally said that was nonsense. So no one except they really know, I think, what was going on. But it's just interesting to hear to get that sort of, dichotomy. And that's why the subject or at the bottom of Find a Death on each page, there are lots of comments that people can leave. And I really enjoy reading them. A lot of times they're firsthand accounts. A lot of times it's just gossip. But it's usually pretty entertaining, and people have the opportunity to say what they want to say.
It is nice. Yeah, you really do give people – it is nice that you have that whole thing. And that's another reason that it's easy to get totally sucked into your website. Like when I do research in general, I usually have to set a timer anyway. But, I mean, like when there's all these comments, because I'll just, like, fall down rabbit hole after rabbit hole. It's fun. Now, I've got to ask, though, do you – you know, since we talk about cemeteries on this show, do you have a favorite cemetery in your area or just in the world or –
Well, I literally live a 5-minute walk to Hollywood Forever Cemetery, and in fact, I could look out my window and see the wall, and that's where I bought my own grave, and I have I love it there because it's, you know, it's the Fairbanks, it's DeMille, it's so many legends. Valentino, my grave is right around the corner from Valentino, and I'm about two spaces up from David White, who played Larry Tate. So I love Hollywood. It's been around, you know, about 125 years, and it's got a sordid history of its own. It went through a very dark time when they padlocked the gates and the earthquake happened in 94. But it's had a resurgence, and now it's popular again. You know, Valerie Harper was just marked a few weeks back, and Anton Yelchin from Star Trek, the young man who was killed.
Yeah, that was so sad.
Very, very mm-hmm. sad. And Mr. and Mrs. Yelchin, one of them or the other, are there every single day. And it's been years now, but they're there every single mm-hmm. day, tending to his grave and just talking to fans, which is, you know, quite lovely in a way, and quite tragic, too. But so I love Hollywood Cemetery.
Wow, I hope I get to visit it sometime. It's definitely on my to-do list for cemeteries. And I love that you brought up that there is a resurgence lately. And that's really interesting that you've noticed a resurgence in the popularity of the cemetery, because that's my hope for cemeteries in general. You know, I am always telling people that cemeteries are for the living, and we really, you know, don't know what happens to us. We can all argue. We can all say we know what happens after we die. But really, the cemeteries are for the living, and I think that's really cool about Anton Yelchin's parents being there, because it's a place for them and they can directly meet his fans. But I'm so curious, mm-hmm. like, about when did you mentioned you noticed sort of a resurgence, like how recently did you notice a resurgence in people visiting the cemeteries?
Well, this particular cemetery, say it went through some really rough times, and it actually it was making more money with people having their remains exhumed and taken other places for the longest time because it was in such disrepair. And but Hollywood Cemetery was bought by a couple of brothers and reopened, I think, in the late 90s. And they spent a lot of time renovating it and restoring it. And they started the whole showing movies in cemeteries thing. It was nobody was doing that before. And about 15 years ago, they started doing it on Saturday nights. I think it was about 250 people that they sold tickets to, and now 2,500 every Saturday and Friday they do them now. So they've made it into a social area, which cemeteries, you know, at that point weren't doing that yet. And so they made it kind of hip to be, you know, put buried there. Chris Cornell, Soundgarden, Chris Cornell, he was put there in the last couple of years, too. And, of course, now being that he is, you know, this cult figure tragically died young, he's got a lot of young fans that will go there, and they want to be by their idols, too. So it's interesting because a few steps away from Chris Cornell is Nelson Eddy. And Carol Burnett's grandmother was buried there because she was a big Nelson Eddy fan, so she wanted to be buried by Nelson Eddy. So it's just how it all repeats itself, and it's really nice that people come back. It is.
Yeah. Is that the same cemetery where like one of the Ramones is buried?
Yes, Dee Dee, and then there's an enormous statue for Johnny, and Dee Dee's on the opposite end of the same lake, yeah.
Oh, they're both buried there. Oh, okay, I didn't realize.
Oh, well, Johnny will be. Currently he's on a mantelpiece in his wife's house, but which I think is bizarre to have that thing. It has to be 15 feet tall, this massive monument for Johnny Ramone, but he's not there yet.
Huh, well, maybe there's some things going on in the families or whatever. No, there could be a lot of family dynamics. Yeah. Now, are you still collecting items? Like, I know you have the Jane Mansfield death car and things like that. Are you still collecting items?
Well, because we had, you know, our museum, I've had it for about 7 years, and we closed actually about 2 weeks before the lockdown. It was a really sad decision to make and sad to close it, but it ended up, you know, working in our favor. And so a lot of our collection has been put away in storage, including the Jane Mansfield car, which was a hell of a thing to try to find some place to store that 18-by-8-foot piece of twisted metal. But we did, and you know, things still do end up in my possession. People do send things still to me. Odd things. I mean, you've read about my collection, so you know I've got like things like William Demarest's business card and James Garner's golf tees, and I have the original phone book that Colonel Sanders' name is listed in. So along with the piece of the Titanic and the brick from Lucy's house and a piece of the Hindenburg and all sorts of things. So, you know, my collection is still growing. We'll find a home for it eventually. But currently everything is sort of tucked away.
Yeah, when you were in Texas a few years ago, did you and Troy get a chance to go to the National Funeral Museum down in Houston?
Oh, Tui, we've been a couple of times. It's one of our favorite places.
Oh, okay. I was like thinking, you know, you should be there. You should go there. All right. Yes. Yeah. That's really an amazing place. And there was much more in it. Like from the outside, when we pulled up, I thought, oh gosh, it doesn't look very big. But then when we stepped inside, I was like, oh wow, candy store. We were there quite a while. So I really love that.
I mean, how many times can you say you've sat in the back of Grace Kelly's hearse?
not too many.
No, I love that place. It is a treasure, and I'm so glad that it's there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. Gosh, I'm looking at the time. I'm gonna just do my say the little things I have to say before the show ends, real quick. Get that out of the way so that you and I can just chat until the radio stream kicks us off. All right. So let's see. Before I bring you back to say your final words, I need to thank Teal Gray and the Para Mystery sponsors. We have Be Healthy Nutrition in Granbury, Texas, and we also have the Lavender Crow, and you can find both of them on Facebook. So find them on Facebook and give them some love. Now, Para Mysteries broadcasts live each Tuesday at the same time, but each week there's a different featured host and a different topic. So even though I won't be here next Tuesday, I really invite you to hit the follow button here on Blog Talk Radio on that show page. Not only is that a really great way to show your support, but you also will get reminders for upcoming shows. Next week, we will be having Mark, the fat psychic. He's really not that fat, but whatever. On the third Tuesdays, we will bring you the father and son paranormal duo from RIP. That's Greg Stevens and Brandon Lee. And the fourth Tuesday of each month, that's when Sister Sage arrives and she shares her astrological insights with us right here on Paramysteries Radio. And then, of course, at the first Tuesday of next month, I'll be back with a brand new episode of Tombstone Tuesday. So whether you're listening live or catching the replay, I really want to thank you for tuning in. And I want to bring Scott Michaels back here. I'm so excited he was able to be my guest today. And I want to just bring him back so he can tell us what he's up to online, anything he wants to share about the future, and where you can find more out about him. So take it away, Scott.
Well, you've got my dearly departed tours, which we're currently on hiatus, but we're working hard behind the scenes. Now, my pal and co-producer Mike Dorsey, we put together the Dearly Departed podcast, which we do every couple of weeks, and they're usually about 60 to 90 minute shows. And I've been involved in show business in a weird kind of way for about 20 years on the periphery. I've known people who have had talk shows, and I ended up in the green room a few times with some pretty interesting people, and those stories would kind of go with me, die with me when I go. So it's kind of nice to be able to put them out there so other people can hear it. Like the strange story I told this week about in our James Bond podcast, I talked about going to dinner with Roger Moore, and he was entertaining us with a machine that made fart noises. And it was one of the most surreal things that I've ever experienced. But I was there with another person and his family, and he didn't tell us what he was doing, but his whole family was laughing as he's pushing this button, and it turns out it was a fart machine behind my friend, and they just thought it was the funniest thing. Or the time Grace Jones went off on me and started screaming at me. So it's kind of, they're fun stories. As I said, they would go with me if I wasn't able to share them, and the Dearly Departed podcast is where I can kind of put them out. And finally, for posterity, I guess. And then the YouTube stuff, Dearly Departed Online, that keeps me really busy too. And the trip to Lucy's grave where she was exhumed and taken back by her kids to Jamestown, New York. We went to her old grave location. And I just went to Amy Semple McPherson's grave recently. And that has something in common with your book, too, because she was she's the evangelist, and she started really female broadcasting. I mean, she had her own radio station, and she broadcast around the country. And she supposedly was buried with a live telephone because she was afraid of being buried alive. So, we just keep going and doing what we do and try to point out weird facts that, as I said before, the things you didn't know about the things you thought you knew everything about.
And I just, before the show began, you and I were talking about prank phone calls, and I just loved that you were talking because we both made them as kids, but yours were so much better than mine. I mean, you actually made prank phone calls on Betty White and Vincent Price, and this cracked me up. He even had Liz Taylor star 69 him, so... And I'm like, what? That, if you just got me, you just went up in my esteem. I'm like, even hot...
Oh, my God, cocktails and celebrity phone numbers and a telephone. That's a magic combination.
Yeah, I guess if we were doing the quarantine back in the 80s, that's how we would all be, there's no interweb, so we would just have to do there was no caller ID either, so I guess we would have just, that's what we'd be doing now, but anyway, that just really cracked me up. Oh,
but I ended up with some good stories, so I was happy. I was fun. I'm glad we did it. You know, the things that I always thought were the most stupid things I've ever done were the things, or the most reckless things I've ever done, or ended up the things that I am most grateful to have done.
That's really interesting, and that's a good takeaway, I think, from this whole good philosophy here. But yeah, you mentioned, I'm curious, I want to hear all your stories, like the Grace Jones. I can imagine she would be very intimidating, so to have her go off on you.
Yeah, she was. I was talking a little bit of gossip. I mean, she was, you know, whenever you do anything with Grace Jones, it was before she was going to be doing a show, a night before. And if you're going to do something with Grace Jones, if you're supposed to meet Grace Jones, you got to figure she's going to show up about 2 hours after the appointed time. And cocktails were flowing, and I repeated a rumor about somebody who was a famous screen queen that was rumored to be somebody was born with both female and male genitalia.
Oh.
And I brought that up with Grace Jones, and she said, well, people say that about me. And I said, well, there's usually no smoke without fire. And that didn't go well.
Oh, my God. And
yeah,
on
so,
that,
so no,
I,
cocktails and Grace Jones, not a good mixture.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Wow. Oh, wow.